This is a podcast that seeks justice. Justice for the lives stolen by those in society that hide amongst us every day. Hidden in our towns, cities, and countrysides, the places that we work, and sometimes in our very own homes. This is Hidden Killers.
Welcome to the podcast. Thank you for listening. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of our breaking updates and discussions on the cases that we are following for you right here. Today, Joan E. Johnston is joining us, a psychologist. We're going to be talking about the case that's currently underway or unraveling, or I don't know how you want to call it, the Chad and Lori Daybell. Every time we see their faces, I think I mentally hear carnival music coming from the background. Lori, I'm curious to get your insight on this. Chad has now asked for separate trials. And I'm curious, I know it's a legal question and you're a psychologist, but from your experience in working on things like this, does this benefit Lori or Chad more? Give us some insight into that.
I think that it's pretty common from some of the defense attorneys that I've worked with to want to sever co-defendants, mm-hmm. because what can you do if you do that? You can start pointing the finger at the other person.
And that makes sense. It's an interesting dynamic that the two of them have. From what we've seen, Lori's been the only one that's been vocal while behind bars. And what we've seen of her seems to be still living in land of religious delusion and still kind of wanting to be back in the arms of Chad and the idea that there'll be, you know, kings and queens in Rexburg, Idaho when the world ends. I don't know what Chad believes, though. I don't know if he's, you know, finally come to the terms that maybe he's not this prophet that he thinks he is. I'm wondering if Chad is looking at Lori going, she's out there. I don't want to be connected to that.
Well, or, another similar thinking would be, this is bad. Mm-hmm. My attorney has convinced me of how bad it really is. Mm-hmm. And it is in my best interest from a survival standpoint to sever my relationship with Lori. And the fact that the attorney asked for that, I mean, he would never ask for that without Chad's permission, mm-hmm. certainly suggests that he has had somewhat of a change of heart, mm-hmm. in terms of looking at, you know, the future and what that means for him from a legal standpoint.
Sure. Let's talk about mental illness and religious beliefs. Can a belief system, and we're talking about the Daybells here specifically, turn into a mental illness, or are they always separate?
Well, I think they can look very similar. Mm-hmm. Certainly people who have a severe mental illness can also develop extreme religious beliefs. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of a fuzzy line there. I think where from a legal standpoint, the line is often drawn is, you know, the court's kind of view, if somebody has a severe mental illness, they're not responsible for that mental illness. Mm-hmm. So if I think that God is calling me to sacrifice my oldest son to prove my love for him, mm-hmm. and I'm hearing his voice, I have a history of schizophrenia, I've been in and out of psychiatric hospitals, my medication isn't working, you know, there's obviously some awareness and acknowledgement on the court that this person is not intentionally hurting anybody. You know, this person is what is engaging in an act that he thinks is a show of faith, mm-hmm. not necessarily a murder. The courts, on the other hand, tend to view extreme religious beliefs and any crime that results because of them, as even though this person might be, we could argue that, you know, somebody was in a cult, for example, and they're brainwashed or whatever. Yeah. The courts tend to view those as you have a choice to join a cult.
Sure.
Did you have these extreme religious beliefs? And therefore, we're going to hold you responsible. So, yeah, I think on the outside, they can look very, very similar. From a legal standpoint, I think the courts look at them very differently. And you're absolutely right. There can be some overlap between the two. But I don't think that, you know, having extreme religious beliefs leads to a mental illness.
Is it always a choice for them, though, when we're talking about this psychologically? Or is it more so, you know, right person, right time, if you will? Really probably be better stated wrong person, wrong time, but essentially someone who is in a state of needing some sort of purpose, some sort of direction, and boom, that leader, that lover or cult-like leader like Chad Daybell thinks seemingly wanted to be happens to pop into your life at that moment. Is that a choice when someone like Lori falls into that world? And I'm in no way trying to give Lori Daybell any sort of excuses or outs on any of this. But mentally, is this someone who, whether it was Chad or somebody else, she would have fallen down the same sort of path had she met them at the right time?
Well, we certainly know that when we look in general at people who join cults, that, they tend to be relatively psychologically healthy. Mm-hmm. They tend to be people who are, seekers, open to new experiences. And oftentimes it really is that situation, mm-hmm. the situational vulnerability that really does separate out the person who joins that group versus somebody who doesn't.
Interesting. It's very much obviously a cult-like relationship that Lori and Chad Daybell had. How often do the leaders like Chad know and believe the bullshit that they're peddling, or are they aware that if I say this, it seems to give me power and control over other people, and they start operating that way because they know that's how they can operate? Who's more into it, the leader or the follower?
Well, it depends on what you mean by who's more into it.
Believing the doctrine of whatever it is they're peddling.
Well, that's, I think when you look at some of the research on cult leaders, oftentimes it's interesting. Oftentimes you see this kind of evolution. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some people who become cult leaders from the very beginning and they have one goal in mind, and that's to exploit other people. But I think that's the minority. And I think what happens sometimes is you can have cult leaders who initially were well-meaning and well-intended. Mm-hmm. And over time, the power and influence they get corrupts them. And they begin using these, techniques. There's almost a playbook that you see these cult leaders use,
yeah,
to kind of brainwash people and coerce them and get their money and, get this loyalty and sexually abuse them and all kinds of things. And so I think from a, following or I guess devotion point of view, I think the followers in many respects are much more believers than the leader is. The leader, on the other hand, tends to be what they believe in is themselves.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And their entitlement to get whatever they want and to exploit and abuse other people.
What happens to the believers? I mean, in this case, Lori, and the BS that the leader has been giving them. When the leader sometimes, and I don't know if Chad will do this, but admits that none of this is true, this is all from my head, this is a lie, do they wake up, meaning the believers, the followers, do they wake up, or do they just keep going down the path of delusion because it would be far too damaging to stray off of that mentally? It would be, just be too difficult to handle.
I think you find a mix. I mean, there's been some interesting articles that have come out about the Heaven's Gate community, for example, mm-hmm. Which is the group here in Rancho Santa Fe of people. I think there was 30 something people who committed suicide, yep, as part of this cult. And there are a few people who still maintain those beliefs in spite of the fact that, none of the prophecies came true. There's no evidence any of that was ever true. There's a lot of evidence. There was a lot of, bizarre beliefs, et cetera, which is, something that you often find with destructive cults in particular. And so I think it depends. I mean, there are some people who do wake up and kind of go, hey, nothing has happened. I mean, these prophecies have not come true. Because it seems like the first one, I can't remember what the date was, but, the first prophecy about the thing in Rexburg and, the 10,000 followers and everything, mm-hmm. that date has come and gone.
Yeah.
But what was interesting is you will find a certain percentage of people who just move the goalpost. So, yeah, this person's still the leader. Maybe they miscommunicated. Maybe they didn't understand this. Maybe it's now next year at this time. And so you're right. I think oftentimes it really depends on that person and how much they've invested emotionally, financially, mm-hmm. that can make the difference. Because you're absolutely right, Tony. When somebody has gone all in, they've closed every other door. It is very difficult to to give that up.
Psychologist Joni Johnson, thank you for your insight. Always a pleasure to have you on and hear your thoughts. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any of our conversations and analysis of the cases that we're covering for you, along with breaking updates as well. Be sure to press subscribe on Apple Podcasts if you'd like a commercial-free experience. That available for you as well, including trying it for 3 days free. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.